of the crop.
He's always on our street. A fat and jolly red-faced man, he really is a treat. He's 2 feet 4 a policeman, he's never known to frown. And everybody says he is the happiest man in town.
Welcome to the 147th edition of the Guna Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, and we are recording on the Wednesday evening after Arsenal's final match of the campaign, the 4-0 drubbing of Aston Villa. Our intro music was suggested by one of our panellists in recognition of the fact that Spurs, at the same time, conspired to lose heavily to 10-man Newcastle, meaning that 2016 saw another in a long line of St. Tottenham's days, as the Gunners finished second to Leicester in the Premier League table. So before we can discuss that and more, let's start with the panel introductions. First up, he's back with his tattooed arm, his encyclopedic knowledge of goalkeepers, and the ability to take my digs at him in the name of listener entertainment squarely on the chin. The man Arsenal had the temerity to turn down for a job in the legal department on the basis that he was associated with the Guna. It's hello, true story. Hello to the one and only Mr. David Udo.
Oh, Gaffer, you told us to turn the phones off, Gaffer.
They're just going to offer you the job, man.
Just got a Splendor offering.
If that's you available, evening all.
So, anyway, after that brief interruption, next up, a fellow editor and a man I had the pleasure to spend a decent break in Catalonia with recently, at least until we arrived at a football stadium to see Arsenal wallop 3-1 by some outfit wearing red and blue, without being able to summon up even one decent Spanish forward in their front three. However, I enjoyed the anecdotes relayed of his time spent in the area previously, none of which will be repeated here. Still, plenty of footballing matters to discuss this evening. It's a warm welcome to Hampstead's finest and the man of a thousand names, Mr. Mustafa Emmanuel Goldstein.
Happy St. Tottenham's Day to one and all.
And last, but by no means least, journo about town and author of the recently published Miracle of Copenhagen book about Arsenal's 1994 Cup Winners' Cup triumph. He's here to plug the new tome, but has a solid connection with the Guna by way of the many fascinating interviews he does for the fanzine. It's only a matter of time before he appears on Sky Sports' Sunday Supplement, as the man's ability to network is something that has to be seen to be believed.
Oh,
not least drinking with his fellow hacks until 4 a.m. after the Football Supporters Federation Awards last December in a King's Cross hostelry round the corner from the St Pancras Renaissance Hotel. On the shortlist for the nicest man in football journalism, it's a pleasure to welcome back Mr. Laith Youssef.
Cheers, Kevin. That's the best intro I've ever had. Thank you very much.
I love being funny. He called it the Miracle of Copenhagen, and it's not a biography of Nicholas Bentner? I'm very upset. Very upset.
Volume 2, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so, I mean, there's only one place to start, really. Indeed. I mean, did we need Sunday after that season? Dave?
Did we need it? Great question. I think we did. I mean, since Christmas, I mean, it's been disastrous in many, many different ways. For me, in particular, I mean, the protest days, as it were, and fights breaking, physical and verbal fights breaking out between us. I mean, me and my father, we held out the signs and... Well, I held one up and the guy behind me took it out of my hands and screwed it up. Thankfully, I had 10 printed out, so that'll learn the fucker. But it was just really, really nasty. And I was really, really fearing things like the lack of appreciation in terms of whether it would actually take place or and if it did, who would actually turn up. So for us to actually have something to celebrate, it put goodwill into the ground and it was a welcome relief. But as long as the season will act as a reminder that we have got to improve over the course of this summer and resurrect this already dwindling squad, then, you know, so be it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, David. Well said. I just thought it was fun on Sunday. It reminded me of the old days. It was just, you go to the game, catch up with your mates, it's a really sunny end of season day. Arsenal play well, admittedly, towards the end. But we've just got Spurs to laugh at every time. And when that came through that they were losing, I remember 89-90 at Norwich, last game of the season, 2-2. We had to win to finish third, and Spurs were sort of challenging for third, fourth. And it went round the ground, they kept us in afterwards, and it went round the ground that Spurs were losing, we were going to finish third. And it was just a rumour. And from that day onwards, I've never, ever listened to anyone in the crowd go, yeah, we're winning, unless I've seen it on, unless someone's proved it to me myself. So I was still a bit sort of dubious. Even at 1-0, 2-0 up, like for Newcastle, and I was just like, no, Spurs are going to come back. They're not going to lose to a team that's relegated, who couldn't even beat Aston Villa, who are arguably the worst team in the Premier League since Derby County, the legendary Derby County. In 2008, yes, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Who achieved a magnificent 11 points. So I'm still thinking Spurs are going to come back. We've had it all year about, you know, we're the greatest side ever, you know, the rest of it. Spurs are back, it's a sea change in London football, sea change in North London football. I put in my Islington Gazette Arsenal column this week all the facts about, you know, fewest goals conceded, all the rest of it. I'm not going to go and mention it now because it's far too tedious. But even then, after all that, they still couldn't finish above us. And we've supposedly had one of our worst seasons ever. It was just, the laughing policeman is just so apt. So, yeah, it was a great, great call by Basti to put that on, because it was just a really fun day. And obviously, in the hostelries of North London afterwards, it was just very, very enjoyable. So, yeah.
Oh, I've not laughed so much since getting that result. I wasn't at the game, strangely, having been to pretty much all the games prior to that. Couldn't get a ticket, but... I got the half time score, and my big worry was, oh great, you know, Newcastle are doing their side of the bargain, and we're 1-0 up, and that means only one thing, 1-1 against Villa. Yes. And of course, you know, the beauty of it is, you know, that if Tottenham can't beat a 10-man relegated Newcastle, in fact, sorry, not beat, get a draw, then they really are very, very, very poor. There were rumours that they were on the piss the night before.
A team whose star player was a Spurs reject they got rid of to Newcastle in January.
Yeah, the irony.
Yeah, Sir Andros Townsend.
Sir Andros.
Sir Andros. So, sorry, Gaston, carry on. Sorry.
Yeah, so I'm just, I've just been, you know, it's just brilliant just to have that at the end of the season, after what was a frustrating season in some ways. But here's the thing, I think, you know, we say it's frustrating. And watching Match of the Day, you know, Danny Murphy and Shearer afterwards were doing their utmost to try and put a dampener on it. And it was Be Nice to Tottenham night on Match of the Day, as we'd expect from them. But what was really, what gets me is that Man City, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man United, all the big clubs, right, well not Liverpool, but all the big clubs, where were they? You know, we actually had, relatively, a very, very good season, and I hate to be the one to say this, but how all the Wenger out lot, of which there are quite a lot, of which I've sat on the fence for a long time about it, but became more Wenger outish this season than ever.
Okay, I'm going to ask you now then, at that point, did Arsenal progress from the previous season?
Well, clearly, yes. We're in second position.
Right.
Right? Albeit the rest of the Premiership was pants, and Leicester had a freak kind of whatever. What the hell happened there? I mean, no one could have made that one up.
But Arsenal scored less points.
We did score less points, and yet we're in second position. We still progressed up the league table. I've been saying the last few years, the whole podcast thing, you know, when we were third and fourth, can we progress? Progress, not perfection. At least if we're moving forward, then I would have patience and say, well, you can't really argue. Listen, I mean, the thing is, the City fans and the Chelsea fans...
Well, I mean, all those clubs are changing their manager. However, the next question I've got for you is, the last three seasons, Arsenal have been fourth, third, second. Do you believe Arsenal will win the title next year?
There's an if, which is good old summer transfer fees and all this blah blah blah. Kroenke, you've got lots of money to spend, Wenger, now, and it's his, you know, if he goes and gets Ibrahimovic and Mario Götze, And the feel-good factor would go, you know, you'd get 20 goals out of, you'd get 30 goals out of those two, at least, but more, hopefully. You need a proven class striker, then yes, we can. If he doesn't, we might have more of the same.
My next question is, do you believe he will buy proven world-class striker?
He fucking has to. He just has to buy a couple of class acts.
It's a yes or no question, Bestie. Do you believe...
Do I believe after the last few years? I'm going to say yes, I believe, because I'm an Arsenal fan and I want to believe that we're going to move on. I believe this, that if he doesn't, he can fuck off. Right, that's it.
Thank you for that. Now, I'm just going to we'll get some listener contributions, so I'm going to refer to them. This one doesn't really need an answer, but I'm going to read it out. This is from Peter Squire. He says, following their final day exploits, can we now be more certain than ever of what Tottenham smells like? We don't have to answer that. But he does add, Spurs are the gift that keeps on giving. I don't think anyone can argue with that. On a more serious note, Simon Rose, a regular Guna contributor and occasional podcast guest, he tweeted, have Spurs blown their cover? Could they cope with title pressure through a whole campaign, or are they now a busted flush? Interesting question, because you could also ask it about Arsenal. However, we'll start with Spurs. I'll start with Leith, actually. Mario Pochettino has signed a new long deal. He's going to stay at the club, oversee the move to their new stadium. Do you see a team that has peaked, or do you think they're going to get better?
It's amazing what lunch with Alex Ferguson does for you, really, in terms of your job prospects. But with my journalist hat on, I would say he's a manager who organises the team really well. They've got a lot of youngsters there who are kicking on. And if you are a Spurs fan, you are going to be slightly optimistic for next season, you know, on the back of this year. Certainly compared to someone like Man City, who will need an overhaul. You could argue certainly Man City have peaked over the last couple of years and they're on a downward spiral. In terms of Man City's sort of achievement over the last few years. As an Arsenal fan, I would have to disagree, because I mean I can't answer that question without sort of talking about Arsenal season, because it was there for the taking. It was absolutely there for the taking. When are we ever going to have a season where Man United are probably their worst side since 88, 89 potentially? You've got Liverpool. Klopp has got them going now. Obviously tonight is the UEFA Cup final, or whatever you want to call it these days, and you know they're going to be firing for next season. He's got a young, hungry side as well. You've obviously got Chelsea. Chelsea won't be as bad as they have been this year, surely. And if they are, it'd be equally as hilarious.
Well, they've done
as
Champions League to get in there.
Well, maybe not. But at the same time, they've lost five of their best players in their history almost. Mm. Yeah, it's like when we lost Tony Adams. I know Terry's signed another year contract, but I mean, how many games is he going to play? His pace has gone. He had a lot of pace anyway.
He'll probably score more own goals.
Let's hope so. Yeah.
He's got a new role this year. It's one of those player coach things. Although I've heard he's going to be the marriage counsellor and something to do with diversity within the club. They could be rumours, I'm not too sure. Yeah. So he's best friend anyhow.
By the way, we could have the laughing policeman on for Chelsea as well, couldn't we? Yeah, 21 points behind us.
Yeah. Oh, you say that. Yeah. I work with a couple of Chelsea fans. I don't want to get naive tomorrow.
I mean, for me, the Liverpool game was a pivotal moment. We came through Christmas. We ground out that 1-0 against Newcastle early on, and we're like, we've got a chance. Even Danny Murphy, who no Arsenal fan particularly likes in terms of being a pundit on Match of the Day, was sort of saying, well, you know, Arsenal have got a chance. And if someone like him is going to say it, then what do the rest of us think? And that Liverpool game, I think it was the 12th, 13th of January, I was covering a game for the Islington Gazette in the press box at Anfield, and I literally had to delete my match report on the final whistle. It was a good lesson to me, if nothing else. But if we'd have won that game 3-2, we could have really kicked on. And then obviously you've got the United game at the end of February. It was such a weak United side. Obviously Marcus Rashford did well, and good luck to him. And you know, I'd almost take him to Euros, because you want to pick the players in form, and he's done really well this season. But to lose 3-2, and it could have been a lot worse, but to lose, that was the main thing, was just so gutting from an Arsenal point of view, because they were there for the taking, or they should have been there for the taking. And it was almost like we shrank. We bottled it, for want of a better phrase. Mm. And you still think, right, OK. And, you know, in press conference after with Wenger, every time you see his quote in the paper, you're like, right, he's up for it, he's defiant. I saw his body language that day, and he was saying, yeah, we're going to win the league, or we're going to challenge the league, I should say. His body language didn't believe that. No, nowhere near believing that. Mm. And then we've got Swansea on the Wednesday. You think, right, okay, 3 points against Swansea, with all due respect to Swansea. We lose that as well. And it's just, it's the same old thing every year. And I'm just so frustrated as an Arsenal fan that, you know, obviously, like you say, I mean, you could say we're progressing in terms of, right, okay, we're third, now we're second. But I've given up on stats in terms of sort of quoting them, apart from obviously my Arsenal Isn't the Gazette column. Because you look at the Brazil-Germany semi-final. That was the 7-1 when Germany beat Brazil 7-1. Brazil had 53% of possession. After that, I was like, I'm never going to believe another stat in my life. So you could argue, yes, obviously we have finished rounds up, which is great. But who have we finished rounds up to? Leicester. And deservedly so. They deservedly won the league. But this was our time. And we've just blown it again. So
I'm going to turn the question round before returning to Spurs,
yeah.
David. The idea of a busted flush. Psychologically, is there any way back for this Arsenal team in terms of the next couple of seasons, should they be in the position to challenge for the title come February?
With the current squad as it is now, entering into the transfer window, no, it needs refreshing. Mm. I mean, as we all know, last summer we were the only team in the top five leagues across Europe, in the top division of those leagues, that did not sign an outfield player in the transfer window. And with all due respect, whilst he settled in relatively nicely, Elneny was done out of desperation. I mean, it's not as though we were fighting off Barcelona, Juventus and Bayern München to get a hold of him. I think Wenger himself said we were so cheap because nobody knows who he is. It's like, well, that's great. Well done, global scouting network of Carbassiou, Moro and Grimaldi. Très bien, mes amis. We need improvement. Blatantly so. It looks almost certain that Granit Xhaka, that deal is done. My understanding from people I've heard of is that Gazidis is going ahead with his Q&A in a couple of weeks' time. As before then, we are set to... my understanding is we are to unveil Xhaka and another big name, big money signing. And Gazidis is happy to do that Q&A. Say, well, look what Daddy's given his children. You do this as a thank you. Yes, we'll have this question from the Hungarian Arsenal fan who's got no idea what he's talking about, as we had the last Q&A here. But in answer to your question, the current squad, no. You see, after games when we lose, they can't get down the tunnel quick enough, but it's not as though they huddle up together. You see Sanchez and Ozil, they go off separately, not together. Although they've got the right to go off together, saying we are so much more than this. Mm. We have to move in the summer. They go off separately. They don't care. They go off in dribs and drabs. The team needs to kick up the arse. Wenger trusts or relies or has too much faith in these players, so can't motivate them. Steve Bould, to make sure he pays the Rodine school fees for his daughter, puts out the cones and does absolutely nothing else. We need investment into this team, not so much, not just financially, but in terms of the right players. If we get a new spine in that team and a proper leader and some physicality, in answer to your question, yeah, we've got a chance. Well, but the current squad, no.
I think a couple of men might be a good idea.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I've sat next to Kev a couple of times and we both agreed that there are too many, it's a soft touch, there's too many, you know, players like Ozil and Sanchez, yes, of course, they're extremely talented, but there's Sanchez got a little bit more metal, but there's no metal in the team. When you need that bit of Tony Adams putting his fist up, going, come on, you know, there's no come on there. Giroud doesn't have it. Just the way he runs. I mean, there's the body language thing, you know, we're a bunch of perfume ponces, to put it in Whitsnalen Island.
I think it was summed up quite perfectly by the first Watford goal in the FA Cup game.
No.
In the sense that the cross comes in, and you've got a 6'8" former German captain and a Brazilian international centre half standing there, and then just not the big fat Watford centre forward, the other one's in the middle of them, and he manages to get to the ball.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Yeah. You know, that's a.
But hang on, I'm going to come in here and say, I had a look at the table on the way here. Goals conceded. The best record was 35. There were two teams. I think it was Man United and Spurs. Next was Leicester and Arsenal with 36. Now, I know Leif has said his thing about stats, but we've conceded. Is it just we conceded them at the wrong time, in the wrong games? Because on paper, it looks like we've got as good a defence as any other team in the Premier League.
It could be a timing thing. I mean, I think everyone remembers the Barcelona home game. For the first 67 minutes of that, we played really, really well and withheld them. But we get one double chance and we get excited and the players go over the halfway line. And then we get caught on the break. And remember, I don't know about you, but when the goal went in, it wasn't the Barcelona fans cheering. It was the rest of us going, like, oh, well, we're kind of done now. Yeah. I mean, with regards to stats, we may have that with regards to goals conceded. Look at goals scored. We scored one less goal at home than Newcastle United.
Is that right?
Yeah, we had the same number going into the last game, but they scored five and we scored four.
No, I mean, the problem is at the other end, we're not scoring enough goals. Our defence is okay. It's not brilliant, but it's not lethal. We're not. It's that old illness of getting around the box, keeping possession, going round, and not putting the thing in the back of the net. I can't remember which game it is now. There've been so many this season like that. But there was one where we went through the whole first half and we hadn't had a shot on target. And I'm thinking, what the heck? You know, we've got to have some shots on target, and you've got to have play. Now for that, that's why I mentioned players of the quality of Ibrahimovic and Mario Götze. You can criticise them or whatever, Götze in particular maybe, but he's a player who scored the winning goal in a World Cup. He's an experienced player. Ibrahimovic obviously is a class act. What we're missing is either a Wright, a Bergkamp, an Henry, that someone who can say, right, whatever happens, I'm going to get fucking 20 to 25 goals this season, so don't worry about that bit. And unfortunately, Giroud has fallen short. I mean, his top score has been 16, which this season as well, and then
League goals,
and then 2 seasons ago, I think he got 16, but he's never hit that 20 mark. And he's not a bad player, he's a good player. Holds a ball up well, he's like an Alan Smith, if you like.
The big problem with that, it's not so much Giroud as a player. It's the way we play with our 4-2-3-1 tiki-taka, in the sense that, we don't get shots on goal in the first half, but we keep our 75%. I mean, Brendan Rodgers got the sack because he did that and smoothed his skin over and over again. As Liverpool manager, he got the sack because it wasn't working. I mean, I thought the world knew after Spain's performance in the World Cup against Germany in 2014 and Brazil's efforts in the semi-final against Germany, that's done and dusted. Tiki-taka's had its 2-3 years, and our league's been won by a 4-4-2 team. Yeah. Oh dear Christ!
Well, that's something I've been going on sometimes it happens. He brings on it, 2 strikes, and guess what? We score a goal. It's not rocket science. And when the tiki-taka doesn't work, you've got to have a plan B. He's too reliant on that tiki-taka, and it is.
Our plan B is taking Coquelin off and bringing on another one of our 5-foot-8-inch inside forwards. But Ramsey moves from the right wing to one of the defensive two, you see. But he's an attacking player, so no Arsene, it's still 4-2-3-1. It's still no U-shoot. An analogy I raised with my brother is that, that's great, and it's like making love. It's beautiful, it's tender, you take time, it's amen to in the background. But sometimes women just prefer being bent over hard and fast from behind. I know that's fine, and Kevin's grimacing, that's fine, but this is the thing. Arsenal don't do that. There is no variation at all. I mean, we got lucky in the Leicester home game in the sense that it was a Hail Mary. It was let's throw it in last seconds of time, and Welbeck gets a flick on. That was it. That was shit.
But Welbeck, Welbeck's in the right direction. I'm afraid a player like Walcott, for me, is he going to West Ham this season?
Well, let's hold on, Theo, because he will be coming back in terms of this discussion.
Will he?
Whether or not next season, to be discussed. However, I'm going to bring Laith in here because let's hear our special guest's voice for a change. And I've got 2 questions, very similar. AFC Grumpy tweeted, "Do you think it matters who we buy when the issue is the management?" And Anthony Glenn says, "If Arsenal don't go bigger in the market this summer, are they wasting their revenue advantage as many others begin to catch up? Or with all teams being able to afford good players, are we entering an era where the ability of the manager is all important?" Arsene Wenger was the manager of a team that won the title 3 times between 1998 and 2004. Did they win it because of Wenger? or in spite of him?
Oh, honestly, we
can they win the title again?
We could be talking for hours on that. I did see those tweets, and they're really good questions. In terms of Arsenal, I mean, where do you start, honestly? It's like, if we're going to talk about Wenger, I mean, in his defence, if you're talking about, you're sort of talking, September 96 when he takes over, so you've obviously got, you know, the famed defence, the famed back five, as it were. You look at the side into, you, cheers, Kevin, he's just poured me a glass of red wine, thank you very much. You look at the Invincibles back line in 2004, he got all those players in. You know, obviously Campbell, you could argue David Dean pushed for the signing, but he's brought Lauren, you know, he's brought the others as well. Obviously, Tony Adams did play a part, so did Lee Dixon, but it's still, you know...
That was his defence.
Yeah, but he's brought Ashley Cole through as well. So, I mean, you could argue that, OK, I mean, we are talking about 2004 here, we're not talking about now, but he did bring that defence through. So, what and also, what makes it more frustrating is because he can do that. We've seen he's got a proven track record. Arguably the greatest league team in the history of English football. That defence was practically his. So, again, it goes back to his stubbornness. He's just so, so stubborn in terms of what he does. And it's ground all day. I tweet it every year when we get knocked out of the Champions League. It's ground all day. And that's half the reason people are so fed up, because they're just sick
so
of it.
So it is the manager?
But yes and no. That's the whole thing. It's yes and no, because...
Doesn't matter who we buy in the summer, as long as the manager remains, we are not going to win the title.
If you put a gun to my head and ask me that question... Or a glass of wine, I would say, yeah, we're not going to win it. We're not going to win it.
I disagree. I think with the right personnel, ultimately, Arsene Wenger isn't running around that pitch. And what I've seen this season is a team that has skill and ability and has obvious weaknesses.
I think you touched there. Sorry, can I just interrupt? Yeah. Skill and ability is great. But when you go to Old Trafford on the 27th of February, and if you win... You can go top, or you know, if you beat Liverpool, if you hold on to a 3-2 lead, yeah. That's not skill and ability. That is character. That's yeah. all it is. Just yeah. head the ball out
Absolutely.
Of my corner.
And I agree.
Get
I
stuck
agree.
In. It's not about skill and ability. No, and it's about getting, you know, getting stuck in your teammates.
That's exactly the point
playing
I was
for
about
the club,
to make.
Playing for the badge. Playing for the manager. If you don't care about the manager, you don't care about the manager. That's come from somewhere, and Wenger is not engendering in that.
Well, that's what Leicester has.
Spirit, yeah, absolutely.
Leicester have that spirit of fuck this, we're going to win this game, whatever happens. And we don't care. Ranieri saying, oh, it doesn't matter if you lose, boys. Don't worry about that. Just go out and fucking enjoy yourself.
Great management as well. Yeah,
brilliant manager. And Tottenham have had a bit of this. This season, until the last game of the season, Chelsea, it started going wrong for them, didn't it? But. The point I was going to make was that if you had that leader in the team, I hate to say it, a John Terry, what's the name of that Tottenham bastard, the Carrie Kane, right, I forgot his name, but he is a talisman. Or someone who's going, that the whole team will pull together and play for. Now, Ozil isn't that man, he doesn't have that character.
Is Alexis that man?
Not quite, no. Because a problem Alexis has is, for all his skill, talent, and a rocketing shot now and again, he hangs on to that ball. He doesn't. He's not like Bergkamp. He'd release the ball much quicker than Alexis. Yeah. He wouldn't hang on to it all the
so
time.
So he doesn't have the football intelligence.
No,
to
he doesn't.
Be a Bergkamp.
He could still acquire it. I mean, that maybe is down to management, you know. But I mean, because Wenger.
Or maybe he needs to be amongst players he can trust. Maybe he's not releasing the ball.
Why I'm saying a Götze or a Abramovich. I'm saying them, but players of that calibre at least, another couple of truly world-class players in the team would lift the whole team that notch. Everyone would raise their game a bit. Everyone would say, OK, let's pass it to him. Yeah. I think a lot of it is also, Alexis has gone in, he's thinking, oh, well, do I give it to Monreal or Bellerin running up the side? And and he's thinking, I can do better than anyone around me, and ends up losing it because he's trying to take the whole team off.
You're absolutely right, but then that goes back to signings. And we'll think about the players that we've been saying we need for the last 6, 7, 8 years, and it's just so frustrating.
It is frustrating.
His global scouting network, led by the likes of Steve Morrow, Gil Grimondi and Danny Carbassian, they've come up with ideas in the past with Yaya Sanogo. Lucas Podolski, great player, but didn't fit into our tiki-taka 4-2-3-1, so lasted 3 seasons before going to Turkey.
He had a really good season as well.
Yeah, but they're all a bit bargain basement, aren't they? Let's be honest, I'm talking about world-proven, world-class, right?
Well, Lucas Podolski's got 120 caps for Germany and won the World Cup.
Yeah, no, he's not bad.
They paid 12 for him.
He's not... he was one of my favourite players in some ways, but he's not someone who...
once again, I'll just say Henry, Ian Wright, Bergkamp. You know, players like that who you know they're going to go fuck this ball back in the net.
But then we bought Henry for $10 million from Juventus, who had played about sort of 10-15 games for Juventus on the wing.
On the left wing.
So yeah. If we're looking now in European football, are you looking at a sort of top level player, or are you looking at someone that Wenger can sort of bring in the mould?
I'm saying a couple of World Cup winners and or World Cup top players. He was, but I'd say someone like Götze possibly.
You do realise Götz is exactly the same as about seven players we've all met.
I know, that is one.
He's 5 foot seven. He's got 1.5
pounds. All right, Müller then.
The point I was making was that signing players, it's not just Wenger, it's Wenger's backward team. The way the team plays is not just Wenger, it's his backward team. And let's look at it. I mean, the scouting network is obviously not working, and towards the end of the season, we poached the chief scout of Leicester, yeah, who specialises in buying cheap players from Ligue 1 in France.
Apparently, the individual concerned was not the one who identified Mahrez and Kante.
That was Steve Walsh, their former centre-half, yeah, I believe. Yeah. But anyway, look, Wenger's scouting team, everything not good enough, needs to be enriched. And he tried to revolutionised the youth team about 3-4 years ago with Andriy Jonker. Mm. But what I'm saying is they're getting the elbow.
But the thing is, Wenger's never found another David
Dean. Let me finish, Basti. You look at his coaching team, Bora Primorac. Okay, his best friend, and felt sorry for him when a bribing Marseille beat his team in the European Cup. But he's been the Arsenal coach. And you see it whenever we do win a trophy. He sort of picks it up, waves it for a second, because he goes, oh, I don't know, I'll just do what I'm told by Arsenal. Pat Rice, you know, a huge miss because he did whatever Arsenal was telling him. Neil Banfield, can't believe he's got the role of being a coach at Arsenal. We do that forever. Well, it's not just the manager. We've got a Lewin brother as head of medical science, excuse me. The whole thing needs going on.
The word nepotism comes to mind, and one must always remember the reason Borough works with Arsenal in Japan and subsequently in England was because he blew the whistle in France. Mm. And where Arsene is many things, but he's definitely very loyal. Yeah. I'm going to change tack slightly, and I'm going to discuss the crowd at Arsenal, because we're aware, obviously, what's happened at Liverpool in the last few months, what Leicester have done in terms of their home stadium. My question to you is this. If in a match, Arsenal players started winning their individual battles, do you think that would change the atmosphere in the stands?
Undoubtedly. You know, sometimes the crowd feeds off the players, sometimes the players feed off the crowd. But as a fan, and we're all long-term fans here, we know what it means to, you know, or we know what it means to support Arsenal. We know what it means to watch players who knew what it meant to play for Arsenal. I'm not sure it means the same anymore. But when you see a player go in full-blooded, 100%, winning the ball, tracking back, running back to the byline if you need it, that gets you going. That really gets you going. And Sanchez, look, why do people love Sanchez? Obviously, you could argue after that. Yeah, he does that. Yeah, absolutely. And, obviously you could argue that he hasn't been the same since the injury at Norwich in November. But at the same time, when you see a player doing it, and everyone lauds him for his attitude, but we watched Arsenal in the 80s and the 70s for you guys as well, and then, you know, most players did that. And is that...
Well, there were a few.
Well, yeah.
I remember seeing Ray Parler, one of his first games, and he made a terrible mistake, lost the ball, but he fucking went back.
Yeah,
and he battled away,
he stayed at Anfield 92, but he battled away the whole game.
He thought, I've made a mistake, but now I'm going to, you know...
Absolutely.
And everyone was like, right, okay, we'll have this boy, because he's, you know...
Yeah, absolutely, just because you play beautiful football doesn't mean you can't get stuck in, and there's been a lack of that. And I'm not saying it's, Kevin King, that show a bit of passion, you can do both.
I'm afraid that players like Ozil aren't great in that. Okay, and you can have one. Look, the 70s team had George Graham, Stroller. You know, we've always had. There are players that a little bit more have it and a bit more. I'll just put in a great pass. But it would be nice. I mean, when you see Ozil go in for a header, it sinks your heart. You know, and things like that, and people bottling. You know, Walcott bottling, and there was a bottle he did, which was just like, oh,
Sunderland, yeah,
it was just shocking. You know, and there's just when you get that kind of thing, the antithesis of that is what we want to see. Jamie Vardy, there was one. He ran to a ball that was going into touch, and he just fucking ran 100 miles an hour to get it, kept it in, turned it into a move.
Yeah.
You know, we would just let that go out into touch.
Yeah.
You know.
The thing, it's about having guts and balls as well, isn't it? I mean, from a certain point of view, the last time I was really proud of an Arsenal team was during the Van Nistelrooy Vieira thing, and he misses his penalty. And you see everyone, Keown, Parler, Ashley Cole, all of them having a proper go. And the thing is, the Man United players, apart from Neville, even they were standing off saying, "Oh, you know, you kind of brought it on yourself, Ruud, you cheating bastard." Yeah. And when he got married, how many Manchester United people turned up at his wedding? Only Alex Ferguson, and that is a true story. That is a true story. Because the man was a complete Ashley Cole, that kind of man. But no, at that time, I remember my Man United fan friends were getting in touch saying, "Shame on your team, shame on them." I was like, no, at this point, you get, if that was an our ground, you get the fans going, the very deep voice, "Gunners, Gunners, Gunners." I mean, like they did
that again, mate. That was a very Gunners,
Gunners. like when Matthew Connolly came on in the League Cup at home, and within about 3 seconds, did a proper oof up someone's arse and got yellow card straight away. Everyone in the North Bank.
Jason Crowe as well. Yeah.
I do think, though, that like, with players like Coquelin, and Elneny isn't exactly a hard man, but he's not a bad player. But Coquelin, for example, Sanchez, they are players that they do show passion. And so we've got a couple, I think that we're just a couple of players short. I really do think, even...
We've been a couple of players short for 8 years.
The problem is, I don't know, I've never been in a dressing room with Arsene Wenger, madam, but I don't think he's the sort of manager who... I think maybe he shows his players too much respect. Does he get a hairdryer out? I mean, I don't know, what does he do?
David Seaman said in his autobiography, in an interview, he said the traditional thing was the dressing room's essentially completely silent. Players talking to coaches about, you know, maybe I should do this, or a little twinge on my knee, whatever. But it wasn't until the goes... make your way to the pitch, the Wenger stands up and probably says, "Good spirit, good quality, mental strength," and then they go out.
Yeah.
But but
this is the thing, if you say it in that way, whereas if you get your hair dryer out, mind you, I mean, if you look at other managers in the Premiership,
Phil Brown on the pitch wouldn't let them go in, gave them the finger on the pitch in the corner.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look at the champions. I mean, you can't see Ranieri.
I don't know. I mean, I think behind the scenes, he picks his moments.
Yeah.
That's what I've read.
Yeah. So, he buys more pizza.
Yeah, but there's another side to him.
Yeah. So he can get the hairdryer out.
Apparently
when required.
So.
Yeah. But I think every manager has to have that in his locker. When things aren't going well and you see Ramsey kicking the ball into touch and Theo doing nothing or whatever, and you've got to say, there's a point you've got to say, look, come on, that's what's the fucking matter with you?
Yeah,
do you want this show?
Yeah.
Do you want this league or not?
Yeah.
Get out there.
Yeah.
Well, it's still the Zen thing, isn't it? I will just refer...
Well, then we should get a Buddhist monk at least. Get a Buddhist monk if you're going to do the Zen thing.
Well, who knows?
We can't afford the Dalai Lama, can we?
I'm just going to name check Darren Rackham, principally because he does the design for the Gooner front and back covers, but he did send in a question which we've already covered, but I will just read it out to acknowledge Darren. Does the panel think that no matter who Wenger buys, the same problems will always be there down to his management issues, i.e. defensive frailty, players trying to walk the ball in, and inevitable injuries? Now, OK, I think we've covered that. However, I will now move on to Joe Gagliardi, who tweeted, a regular contributor to our questions, has the British core group of players been a failure? Now, remember, gentlemen, in the Premier League rules, effectively, there has to be a quota of domestically developed players. They can actually be European, but by nature, a lot of them are going to be British.
In the sense that Coquelin's technically domestically bred because we got him from Lorient, Cannes.
I believe that he would count, for example, like Fabregas used to count.
Yes, right.
But ultimately, we had the big splash about 3 or 4 years ago, 5 players signing contracts. I think it was Jenkinson, Ramsey, Wilshere, Gibbs, and one other.
The Ox.
Oh, the Ox. And then Theo separately signed a few weeks.
Signed our team.
Yes. So basically, there was then this idea that the future of Arsenal was British. Has it worked out?
I'm massively disappointed about the fact it hasn't worked out. And let's face facts, it hasn't worked out. Obviously, you can argue with Wilshere. He's suffered really bad luck with injuries and it's curtailed his career, because he can be a great player. And it would have been interesting to see how our season turned out if he'd have played 38 league games at the peak of his powers. But in terms of someone like Kieran Gibbs, it's just such a shame he's made a balsa wood. And obviously, the fact he hasn't kicked on, I don't know whether that's affected his attitude. I don't know. I'm not sort of cast aspersions, because I do love him. I think he could have been a great left back. And it's not to say that he can't be. But the whole of them together, you're right, the way that they were sort of collectively announced, yeah, this is the core of the Arsenal side, it's a British heartbeat, as it were, and it just doesn't come through. And I don't know why. I really don't know why.
It strikes me that a lot of the long-term injuries seem to be to these British guys.
Yeah.
And I'm also now bringing Danny Welbeck into that equation.
That's a shocker.
It's just weird. Mm. I just can't work it out.
Same trainers doing the same training sessions. I know I brought him up previously, but I'm still confused as to how and why we pay Shad Forsyth £1.4 or £1.8 million a year just for him to put those cones out in the pre-match warm-up, where they just have to do a little shuffle over them and then run back to the dressing room the very last thing, which Sanchez can't be bothered doing. And he's like head of strength and performance and fitness conditioning, or words of that ilk. But what actually does he do? He's brought in to make our players fitter, and that's evidently a failure. Having said that, as part of his deal, the German national team take him back for international breaks, and he'll certainly be there with them for Euro 2016. So he mustn't be bad at his job. The problem is Wenger and the way he runs it.
I remember seeing that warm-up before the Swansea game, which was just the low point of my season, Swansea at home. And I looked at them and I just thought, what are they doing? It was just such a weird warm-up. It didn't look like they were really... They were doing
anything with someone I know has compared the Arsenal warm-up to a Sunday league standard.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen anything
what
like
they,
it.
What they expressed to me was that currently the top teams warm up with a ball all the time.
Yeah.
Arsenal barely don't. I mean, I'm never in time to know that.
Yeah. Well, it was Bill Shankly. So, it was the old Liverpool way. It was always, only trained with the ball. Yeah. It's fucking football, And have the ball at your feet. If you're going to do it with your feet as well. I personally, when I go on holiday, right, and I go for a jog, I have to do it with the football. I don't see the point in jogging on its own. I don't see these people poncing around, running up and down. Why run up and down without a football at your feet?
20 minutes ago, you were very much an Arsenal believer. Yeah. I'm hearing something a bit different here.
Well, no, I say I'm an Arsenal believer. I'm an Arsenal reliever because I'm just relieved we got above town. It wasn't very good, was it?
If this was countdown, I'd have to say that. I'm sorry.
I'll balls that one up. Look, I'm a fickle football fan, right? And I love it.
20 minutes is a long time.
What I mean is, if I've got that feel good factor after Tottenham fucking it up horrendously, spectacularly.
Okay.
But that's part of the problem. The greatest man on earth.
Exactly. And Giroud's the greatest striker on it because he scored three goals against Aston Villa.
Going back to warm-ups very quickly. Obviously, when I was sitting next to you, I realised you don't get in until literally the game's kicking off or just after. Yeah, in that case, you don't get this part of the warm-up, which I'm sure you guys do. We do the kicky around, whatever. But then when the goalkeeper goes off, we had Matt Macey come and go. And they're taking turns to punt shots from about 10 yards outside the box. Is that just to get it out of their system? Because when they're playing, you cannot shoot from outside of the box.
Can I just add as well, a very, very well-respected, wise old Fleet Street sports writer once told me when I was starting out, he said, if you're lucky enough to look at the warm down, that tells you so much about a team. If you can't look at the warm down, look at the warm up. And I think it really says a lot about Arsenal at the moment.
So. Well, I don't think we do one, do we?
Yeah, well, yeah.
So actually, thinking about it, the warm downs I've seen when doing photography at Pitchside with my brother, and we sort of wait there for 20 minutes after the game for him to upload his photos, the away team always comes out, all of them, doing a warm down. The warm downs I've seen, it's when you've got the likes of Wilshere or players of that ilk returning from injury who don't actually come on.
Yeah.
They do a warm down, even though they didn't even warm up or actually play. The rest of them just get straight into their Mercs and drive home.
But mind you, I remember going to Highbury and I was honoured to be invited into Pat Rice's office with Gary Lewin's brother, Keith Lewin, was a thing that he took me out for the day there. And he said, have you got a tie? Because I need a tie. So I said, all right. So we had the tie. And we did the whole kind of Upper East End bit. But I remember going out onto the pitch afterwards, and it was Stephen Hughes and Dennis Bergkamp. The players who weren't playing were warming down. Well, they were having a 20-minute run. They get sort of run around the pitch a bit. But any of the players who played, they were just in the dressing room and they didn't do a warm down. So even at Highbury, that's not been
an Arsenal thing, I don't think.
Yeah, but the game has changed in terms of fitness and preparation.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to stress he's talking about now.
Ultimately, we haven't. And as mentioned, you've got the same backroom team. It's the likes of Borough Primrose, Banfield, a Lewin brother, and Jerry Payton, the goalkeeper coach. It's nice and you know, nepotism and or family, different bits and bobs, or whatever, but it does need to change. I mean, you look at the coaches we have got who have left, apart from Pat Rice, bless him. They were poached. I mean, when Fabianski went across to Swansea, they took Tony Roberts with him. Yeah. And Chesney came up straight away saying, gutted, actually. Actually really gutted. Great goalkeeping coach. Fabianski was so pleased. Eddie Niedzwiecki, when he left our team to go and follow Mark Hughes everywhere. Yeah. Again, that's a loss. Let's say you've got the right to pick and choose from the Arsenal coaching team. It's like, well, Primorac has been here for a while. Yeah, I wouldn't touch you with a borrowed cock. Thanks very much. I'll take the former Chelsea reserve goalkeeper, Niedzwiecki. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, so... Our coaching team, our holdback team, not good enough.
I always think it was instructive that Alex Ferguson changed his number two every so often, just to get a fresh idea, fresh set of eyes, and just a new attitude. Really, obviously, you could argue Steve McClaren was one of the choices, but at the same time,
yeah, but
Clare
McClaren was a good
coach.
As a
number two. Yeah, good coach. Yeah, absolutely. And Wenger doesn't do that.
Maybe not such a good manager. Yeah. But I mean, we talk about British players. Theo Walcott, body language on the lap of appreciation. Oh, yeah. Suggested we might not see him next season.
Yeah.
In fairness, he had a hamstring injury. he couldn't do the body bump with Mertesacker.
Right.
He had an injury, bless
no
him.
Danger of a medical then.
Can I just say about Theo Walcott? January 2006 we signed him, didn't we?
Yep.
Where are we now? We're in May 2016.
He has been at the club longer than Thomas Rosicki.
Yeah, longer than Thomas Rosicki. He's actually due a testimonial, surely. And we're still talking about him not fulfilling his potential. It's so frustrating.
Right,
that's all I want to say on that.
Well, I'm going to continue, because my next point is, do we think, assuming he does move, that under a different coach he can fulfil his potential?
If it was 2 or 3 years ago, yes. But when he got his ACL injury a couple of years ago, as we've seen, that's rid him of his pace. You never see him do that thing where he nicks the ball round the left back and say, come on, let's go for a jog, see who wins it, because he's lost that part of his game.
Yeah, he doesn't take play.
And that's proved that's 70 or 80% of his game. So if it's 2, 3 years ago, that's probably part of the reason Wenger was thinking he's not done it at all. And a 5'7" quick centre forward, they are redundant in the 4-2-3-1 tiki-taka, what are you doing? Yeah, yeah. But you know what, I can't let him go, because he'll go somewhere else, it would be brilliant. But now he's redundant.
You're absolutely right, Dave. I completely agree with what you're saying as well. But it's also the fact that he just seems to have lost his way. Well, that dribble, I mean, we were all at the game, but was it the West Brom game or the Palace game, actually, when, obviously, there's a massive thing on YouTube, but he just did that dribble and he just meandered into two...
Touch.
Yeah. And like, it was just... What were you doing? He looked completely passionless. Yeah. It's just unforgivable.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, like 80% of his game was speed, having the ball and running at, if his finishing was never the height of his game. But now he hasn't got the speed and he doesn't take players. It reminds me a bit of Michael Owen when he just sort of disappeared,
I remember his debut, though. Yeah. He came on as a sub with half an hour to go when we were 1-0 down to Villa at the Emirates. And
their first game,
That was a different Walcott.
And what about the Ox?
He was doing the step overs. He was putting the balls past play and going around the other side. Yeah. He was nutmegging people going around them. Everyone, where I was sitting, first game I was in the clock end, everyone was getting excited. It's like, give it to the fucking kid. Give it to the fucking kid.
Yeah.
But, he is what he is. He's 27.
Yeah.
He's got his second kid on the way. Mm. He's just waiting to, sit out his 5-year contract and then fuck off to Major League Soccer. That's what he wants.
I think we should have a little thought for Flamini, Rosicki, and
Mikel
Arteta. Although good servants to the club, Arteta has not been around as long as the other two. I mean, Flamini obviously went and came back, but I must say I'm relieved that they are leaving, because I mean, I feel that players like Arteta and Flamini, albeit Flamini did show some passion, I don't think in the last 3 or 4 years they were necessarily...
They weren't title-winning standard.
No, definitely not. And Rosicki,
Rosicki could have been.
Yeah. Well, Rosicki's a world-class player.
Yeah.
But, I mean, talk about Balsawood. I mean, it's Balsawood and China and everything else. They're breakable. It's a killer, Rosicki, because I saw him score a goal at Hamburg
you know, when we beat them 2-0 in Hamburg, and that goal is
that was his first goal for the club.
It was just brilliant. I remember, and I've seen him do it, and against Tottenham when he took them on, you know, single handed.
And he celebrates with Sign of the Devil with both hands. Love it. As a heavy metal fan, he got me.
It's his boyhood dream football star, right? He's like the top footballer. He's who you want. And the 1-0 against Tottenham the day after my mum passed away, and he went and put that ball in the roof of the net at Tottenham, and it was just like, you know, I was going like that, obviously. And it was
interesting to see how much love there is for the guy, demonstrates something we're not aware of, which is basically what goes on behind the scenes between the players in terms of influence and the dressing room thing. You know, we don't get that, but it's pretty evident.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you can see how well respected he was, and going back to when we signed him in the summer of 2006 after the World Cup in Germany, or before the World Cup actually, we'd signed him, and then do you remember that Czech Republic game against America, USA, when he got those two cracking goals? I'm sure they won 3-0, and we're like, oh my god. And it didn't even cross our mind it was like a Johnny Jensen sort of 92 with scoring that goal. But I feel cheated, because he could have been an absolute Arsenal great.
Such a talent,
absolutely. And it was just we were cheated through injuries. I mean, remember when it was his Achilles, wasn't it? In summer 2008? And I remember reading I still buy the programme because I'm a really sad man, but I'm a proper programme collector. But I remember reading Arsene Wenger's column, and he said he'll be back in a week. And it was 18 months before he played again.
Well, this is the thing with Rzeczki. I mean, he could have been Dennis Bergkamp.
Wow.
I mean, he had that. Remember the goal he scored against, was it Barnsley in the FA Cup away or something? And he dropped a shoulder and he did this thing. And I remember Philip Neville sitting there saying, he's got no right to do that. That's disgusting. Yes. He shouldn't do that.
He said if he'd done that in the training, he would have two-footed him.
It was like the most beautiful bit of football you've ever seen in your life. Yeah. And it's a Neanderthals like Phil Neville having a go at him. But we've had moments with Rzeczki. Unfortunately, it's sort of like five or you could count them certainly on two hands, if not one. Yeah. Sublime moments, and then just but over 10 years, how many actual years has he played?
Yeah. For the team? Well, I mean, if it wasn't for Abu Dhabi, I do want to move on to Copenhagen 94, but I've got to just quickly name check a couple of tweeters, because I like to get everybody in. So we'll do some very brief answers to these, but I'll only ask one of you. Andrew Kingerby emailed us, with Celtic starting work on a safe standing area, do you envisage a day when they make a return to Premier League stadia? After all, it has now been proved that the policing, not the terracing, caused the deaths at Hillsborough. Now, I'm just going to give this one to Basti because atmosphere is one of your key points.
As far as standings concerned?
Standing.
Well,
I
would say, well, one of the main reasons for Hillsborough was that ridiculous fencing at the front of it, which was, it's unforgivable. I remember one thing that Highbury always had was that little picket fence at the bottom. We never had that cage. Mm-hmm. And if anything happened, people could spill out onto the pitch. Unfortunately, at Hillsborough, that wasn't the case.
But it's coming back.
But I think standing... I remember a bit of name-dropping here. Having a drink with David Dean. Hamilton in Hampstead. He walked into the Duke. I was there just after watching a semi-final with some friends. And I had an Arsenal shirt on, and David Dean walks in. I said, what are you doing here? He's in my local, and he walks in. He said, oh, I'm going to see someone from the comedy store. Could you just stay here a minute? I want to have a chat with you. So I ended up having a chat with him. But without going into the whole story, he ended up saying to me, look, could you do a little report for me on how you think we could improve the atmosphere at Highbury? And I said, sure, Mr. Dean, yeah, whatever. So I wrote this 7-page report. He just wanted, like, I think I was going hell for leather on it, obviously. And sent it in to him. It didn't make a big difference, but it was nice to be asked and have a chat, you know. Anyway, and my main point was, having just been to Munich to watch Arsenal versus Bayern, which we lost 1-0 but qualified, and that standing seat thing where you could stand up and you had your own little terrace around you, and there was no way there could be any crushing or anything like that, but you stood. And if you're standing, you are the 12th man. You're going to sing more. You're going to, you know, you're going to have a better atmosphere. Standing means getting on your feet with the team. Come on, you know, all that. Yeah. And we try it here. You know, now at least
you know, stewards don't make us all sit down all the time as they had done for a while. But it is a big thing, I think, definitely. I don't know if they were all standing at Leicester all season, but I should presume they probably were at the end.
Probably at the end. So, in conclusion, when the fat lady sings, she isn't sitting on her ass. Now,
absolutely. Hey. Any singing teacher will tell you, if you're going to project your voice, you have to stand up.
Last question from... Dave, do you want to say something? You're right.
Yeah, I just wanted to say... touched on it briefly, but massive respect for the Liverpool fans after struggling for so long.
Well, I'm going to stop you there. You're going to come back to it.
Right,
because
okay.
The next question, the final question from a listener, is from John Hughes, who says, would you take a Liverpool-style Europa League run over the last 16 Champions League exits as usual? So in other words, would you exit Champions League at the group stage to give Arsenal a chance in Europa League? However, first up on Liverpool fans.
On a really serious note, I was up at Hillsborough in September 88 to watch Arsenal play Sheffield Wednesday. There was only like 17,000 there, 500 Arsenal fans. I remember walking through that tunnel.
Was it the? I was 2-1.
George Courtney was ref, so I don't remember that. But
I remember the League Cup game. I think.
Yeah. That was the quarterfinals.
I remember that because I was on the upper tier.
Right. Yeah.
But we travelled up with Amy Lawrence, okay, who was actually standing downstairs.
Oh really? Yeah. Amy's fantastic. I've got a lot of respect for her. But I remember going through that turn. I was obviously in Leppins Lane, but going through the tunnel and there was no lights on, you're thinking,
okay,
you know, I was only like 16, 17, it's just like, this ain't safe. And then without going into too much detail, the police didn't particularly impress me that day either, with 500 Arsenal fans. And you know, for what they've gone through and to fight against the whole system as a journalist, you for me and a lot of journalists who I respect and I work with and across the board as well, you want to report the truth. And the truth was not what the Sun put on the front page. And it's an absolute scandal. And it's all credit to every one of those Liverpool families and every one of those Liverpool fans who spoke for 27 years, 26, 27 years, whatever it was, to go, well, no, this is not the truth. We did not do that. There were factors.
Astonishing it took 27 years for the authorities to acknowledge what was bloody obvious to everyone within a few weeks.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. But to answer your question, I would say, for me, if you're talking about safe standing, I think you can do safe standing. I like you say, you know, you talked about Munich, I was at that game as well, and you can do it. And obviously, like you say, Celtic are doing it, and good luck to them as well. I would just go to Liverpool fans and say, do you want safe standing or not? And if you do, then we'll have it in England. If you don't, from what you've gone through, I'll completely respect your opinion on that.
Okay, well,
to answer your...
Europa League.
Yeah, Europa League. I would go for a 99-2000 choice or answer,
right?
Because we obviously qualified for the Champions League, weren't good enough in the Champions League, end up in the UEFA Cup, and the UEFA Cup run was a lot more fun until we got to the final. Obviously, it was Copenhagen against Galatasaray and Copenhagen against Parma, but that run, I mean, we beat Deportivo La Coruña. I don't know if you could say it better than me, Dave.
Deportivo La Coruña.
Celta
Vigo was Champions League 2003-04.
No,
actually, that game 3-2 in Vigo.
So the semi-final was Lens.
The quarter-final was Corona. 5-1 hybrid.
The last 16 was Nantes.
That was the game before Christmas. We beat them 3-0 at home.
We beat La Coruña in the quarter-finals.
Yes, yeah.
My memory is fading.
Oh, don't. Honestly, I'm getting worse at that as well. But that UEFA Cup run was fun. That was really good fun until we got to the final.
The Liverpool fans certainly seem to enjoy their semi-final.
Yeah, and I'll credit to them as well. That was an amazing game, certainly against Dortmund in the quarters as well. But
right, on the subject of European competition, Leith, you are here for a very good reason. And we are running out of time, but I'm going to extend the podcast a little bit past the hour, which I shouldn't, but I'm going to. Copenhagen 1994. Before we get to the main man here,
about that.
Basti.
John Jensen in a pub, 3 a.m, standing on a table going,
absolutely.
Was it something about
were
scum?
You there?
We beat the scum 1-0.
Were you there when he realised he'd lost his wallet?
That I don't know. I don't remember him losing his wallet, but I remember him standing up. I remember walking in and Brolin was there in the pub.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, Brolin was in.
You have to walk the door sideways. Then.
Well, I don't know. I went into that pub, and then the first thing I saw was Thomas Brolin.
What was Brolin doing there? He was in there after the game.
He was in there visiting the bloke who owns the pub because they're all like, it's all like Copenhagen. He'd been there, but obviously he knew him or whatever, and he went there. Well, I don't know, but he was in the pub having a drink, Brolin. After the game,
right.
It was sort of like, "Oh, it's Thomas Brolin."
Thanks for hitting the post. I know.
Yeah. No, it was like,
"Let me buy you a drink."
To say he was looking pretty miserable. And anyway, so the night went on, and then sort of like my train left at 6 a.m.
Where was
so the
train
I thought, "Well, I might as well Hamburg."
Was it really?
Fair yeah. Play. So I was waiting for the. Train. I thought, okay, well, I'm just gonna do all night in this pub, and who walks in? Johnny Jensen. It was just like, right, here we go, party time. Everyone wanted to talk to him. He was sitting in the corner, his brothers and friends all going, no, you're in the end, you know. And he just got on the table and he just went, 1-0, he beats us scum, 1-0. And everyone just said, brilliant, you know. And it was just such a brilliant night. Yeah, oh, absolutely. What a night. One of my best nights ever. One absolutely. Of my best nights.
David, general memories of the whole campaign or just the final?
As soon as the teams came out, first thing that went through my mind was, they're goalie little. Little Luca Bucci, he was only about 5'7", 5'8", and as we saw, he went full stretch and couldn't even get a fingertip to Smithy's great shot. Yeah, and it proves that you need to be a lanky, useless bastard to play in goal, and that was my career. And then I go, yeah, I remember that. And with hindsight, when I was at the book launch of Leith's novel last week, someone had managed to get the DVD recording from ITV Sport put onto, the VHS recording put onto DVD, and we watched that, and they show you the starting 11, and they had the likes of Faustino Espria, yeah. Thomas Brolin, players of Gianfranco Zola, yeah. And we had a midfield of Ian Selly and Steve Morrow.
Yeah.
I mean, there's theft, and then there's a blind robbery. I don't know how we did it.
Forget the worst bit of the actual match of the final was with, I think, 20 minutes to go or something, and Eddie McGoldrick comes on. And I'm thinking, for fuck's sake, you know, we're not going to make this.
In fairness, he's the finest Arsenal player who was born in Corby. He really is.
You love yourself.
Right, I'm now going to go to the author. Sell the book.
Oh, well, I don't know about selling the book. I'd love to sell the season, though, because it was fantastic. It was, as I said to some of you, and firstly, can I thank Kevin Witcher of The Gooner for coming along and backing my my launch party. It was very, very... I was very
thanks
honest
for
to have you
the
there.
Free and pie and a drink.
Yeah, you know as well. It was there too, and actually made the Islington Gazette.
Oh, I didn't get it. I would have got it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got to start following your Hampstead paper.
Oh, I'll definitely be getting the book. It was one of the highlights. Of my
it
life,
makes though. A good doorstop as well. But you know, you're absolutely right. It was so I was 21, as all my friends were at the time, and we were daft and stupid, just like all of us were. And someone said to me, "You fancy Liège away?" And you're like, you go around England, you're following Arsenal everywhere. And in the early 90s, Arsenal weren't the greatest team in the world, although we still won the league in 91, as opposed to sort of Spurs going, we're the greatest team, and still haven't won it since, you know, God knows when. But we said, yeah, let's give it a go. Let's go to Liège. So this is obviously before the internet, before anything at all. We turned up, we had no tickets, no accommodation booked, no idea where we were going. We didn't even have the address. We were clueless, basically. You could argue I'm still clueless now, but the fact we turned up, and we literally just turned up at the Schlesien Stadium, I seem to remember, although God knows what it's called now.
Park,
was it? No, that's Copenhagen.
No,
you're talking
about
Liège.
Oh, right. Sorry, Liège. Yeah, so you sort of turn up, and they were like, yeah, documentation, and we're like, okay, I've got a... Do you remember those visitor's passports, those beige sort of... Literally, absolutely. Yes, we turned up with those. Well, will this do? And they literally sort of unfolded it and then sort of tried to look officious. And someone photocopied it, came back. And I'd like to think somewhere in the bowels of Liège's stadium is a really bad passport picture of myself and my friends. But so that was like a couple of days before. So we just literally got on it in Liège and on the outskirts and sort of turned up on the day, got the tickets off a tower. I'm not. Obviously not condoning doing that, as Jurgen Klopp's been warned about tonight's game in Switzerland. But we sort of did that.
What, has Jurgen Klopp gone out selling tickets?
No, but he said to turn... Yeah, he might... I don't know.
Allegedly.
But he did say to turn up without tickets because it would be fun. And that's what a lot of that's what a lot of Arsenal fans did back in 93. And, you know, we sort of turned up. We got tickets in the home end, but we managed to get in the away end. 2,000, 3,000 sort of gooners out there. Been drinking since... the travel. I know the travel club coach.
Belgian beer is stronger than the stuff
honestly,
you get
in absolutely, Kevin, as I'm sure we all know. But you know, and you watch it and you're going, this is fantastic. This is like, you know, why can't it always be like this? And then Arsenal win 7-0. And you're just like, I know, it's certainly in the old days in cup finals, FA Cup finals, they always say to youngsters, enjoy the day, savour it, because, you know, it may not come around again. And you're a youngster, you think, we won 7-0, we just won the FA Cup, whatever you want to say. It's going to happen next week as well. But the thing is, in that season, certainly in terms of Europe, not in terms of the league, it did happen again. So as soon as we got through against the A's, which was the November, 10-0 on aggregate. I can't think of any sort of two-legged games that we've won 10-0 on aggregate, let alone a sort of second round of a Cup Winners' Cup against, you know, a massive Belgian side. Yeah. Obviously, you know, the draw's made, we've got Torino away. I'm going to be blathering for a bit, so please
don't worry.
Read it.
Go for it.
Torino away, so that's the March. So you've got 4 months to look forward to. It's not like the Champions League where you've got 2 months, which is great in itself, but you've got 4 months for the anticipation. Torino, yeah, let's go over there. I remember being in the barn and sort of being in the loo's upstairs. So there's a reference that maybe some people won't remember.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, Kevin remembers it. But they were awful.
Dodgy.
Yeah,
loos, I tell you.
Floods.
I'm surprised that it wasn't running down the stairs over time.
Absolutely, yeah. And I remember someone saying to, I was just, you know, in the urinal, and there was two blokes next to me, and one of them said, "You doing Torino?" He goes, "No, I'll leave that to the pros." And I was just like, well, what does that even mean? I'm like 21, completely dark. I'm going to the Torino. I actually said that. They looked at me like I was completely mad that I was going to get a head
started. How did you get out there?
Flew to Milan on UF Tours, which was run, allegedly, by a bunch of Manx.
Yes,
I'm not gonna,
true.
I'm not going to go too much detail. You have to read the book for that. And
you
it's been checked out by the legal department.
You stand up for United.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. When we get into, God knows where it was, Stansted, Gatwick, or whatever, and none of us had tickets. And then the bloke was like, I'm going to do really bad. You're the accent, man.
Okay.
Did you stay in a hotel on the outskirts of Milan?
Yes.
Because I went
on... Were you in that as well?
I went on the coach.
Oh, this is like Friends Reunited or something.
I went on the coach.
You met all the way to...
Euston Station. Yes. And travelled by coach.
Blimey, Kevin.
And stayed outside Milan. There was this plan to attend the Milan Champions League game the night before.
Yes,
it didn't come off.
It was Werder Bremen.
It did not come off. Did you go?
No,
it didn't come off. It was a load of bollocks, wasn't it?
We basically turned up in this sort of severe, sort of Soviet style.
There was a bar.
There was a bar. Yeah. That's about all I remember, really. Yes. But yeah, we did that, and obviously, you know, we were the first sort of English team to play in Turin since sort of Heysel. So that was the reason UF Tours put us billeted us in Milan. So we got the coach over to from Milan to Turin on the day of the game. And obviously anyone who's been to the Stadio delle Alpi, which is, I don't think it's even there anymore, it was a dreadful stadium, completely soulless. And we had a 3-hour coach journey, which we drank tequila all the way, basically. It was a dreadful 0-0 game. Every Arsenal player I've interviewed, including sort of, you know, backroom staff and everyone, said it was terrible. And good old Arsenal, I was so drunk, I passed out and couldn't remember a thing. Good old Arsenal, I didn't miss a thing because it was 0-0. So it was absolutely fantastic. So it set us up for the second leg at Highbury. We obviously went 1-0 to the Arsenal. That's where it sort of for
me. Anders Limpar was on the bench for that game.
Was he?
In 93, 94.
No. Was that another
game?
He
got to Everton in that.
Yeah. I remember kissing and hugging that. Do you remember that bloke who's been going to Arsenal for years with a, he's a funny looking fellow with like but frizzy hair, big frizzy hair.
Yeah, with white glasses. Overcoat.
Yeah, I was hugging him and we were going mad. I think didn't George Graham just said be patient?
Although he said that every day.
Yeah,
every day,
you've got to be patient against Torino. Because at the time, Torino was like this big team that we couldn't
possibly beat,
wasn't it?
Andrea Silenzi, you're like, wow, he's an amazing sort of player. Mm. Went to Forest and he was awful, wasn't he? I mean, we could have done better than him. But at the time, it was almost, and that was it as well, it was about the inner.
We were a smaller club in a way, weren't we?
Well, yeah.
Even though we've won the league a couple of times, but we were playing these teams and we were showing a lot of respect. For
maybe it was almost a bit of an inferiority complex. Whether it was voiced or not, I don't know. But
I mean, if we were playing Palmer, it'd be like, who the fuck
is Palmer? Absolutely, that'd just be a group stage victim to sort of beat. But obviously the Palmer at the moment and then present sort of...
they were a big team at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And Serie A was... Well,
funny, isn't it? Because, I mean, the Cup Winners' Cup, you know, as it was then, which doesn't even exist now, or the Europa League, you know, they're things that these days, because of the founding of the Champions League, it seems to have changed. They
almost don't matter unless you're in it. I mean, we're going to go and watch the second half of Liverpool to Seville tonight.
Yeah.
Partially just sort of, you know, it's a European Cup final. But you wouldn't follow that. You wouldn't follow it all the way from the beginning.
I think the commercialisation of it has certainly sort of put a lot of people off.
I think that's an English view. If you go abroad,
people do respect.
They take that competition a lot more credibly, and it's very significant tonight because obviously at stake is not only the trophy, but a place in next season's Champions League.
Absolutely,
and that's going to make a huge difference to either team.
Yeah.
But anyway,
what's the name of the book again?
The Miracle of Copenhagen. Thank you very much for asking.
The Miracle of what?
The Miracle of Copenhagen.
The Miracle of Copenhagen.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, do you want to briefly?
Yeah, I won't. I'll stop blabbering now. But it harks back to a more innocent time, a happier time when everyone was in it together. There was no social media for good or bad.
Mm.
Everyone was in it together. You were an Arsenal travelling fan. You were behind the club. You were all united.
A better time.
Well, yeah.
A lot. Sit your eye pit and up your arse is what I say.
David. Right, okay.
You can sit your fucking iPad.
So, basically, a lot of stories in there.
A lot of stories.
Including a few. I didn't realise quite how many until I skimmed through the book yesterday. But I'm well represented, to say the least. You'll be getting the invoice for the royalties.
Yes, okay.
Anyway, on that note, all I will say is that The Miracle of Copenhagen is available from Amberley Publishing and from all your normal online outlets and in a few bookshops.
And can I just mention, I'm doing a bit of a Waterstones tour. That sounds really, really
good. Go for it. Give us the dates. Give us the places.
I'll be doing Hitchin on Saturday, 11th of June, which coincides with a local beer festival.
I will be at England versus Russia in Marseille.
Yes, you will. Yeah, fair play. I might see you in San Etienne for the Slovakia game, but if not, I'm sure you'll have a ball. It won't be anything like France 98, England, Tunisia in Marseille, hopefully.
I hope so too.
Wellington City, Waterstones, 4th of June, Bedford on the 28th. We're getting more dates, including one with an Arsenal legend. Watch this space. But yeah, thank you very much.
2 Finchley Road, but Waterstones, but don't do Hampstead Waterstones, who threw yours truly out of the shop. Did a story to be told another time.
Right, the only other thing I will say, if people want more detail, follow Laith on Twitter.
Laithy29.
And you will get the plenty of notice of these signings. Cheers, I do not doubt.
Did you call yourself that to steal Marouane Chamakh's shirt number? I thought it was.
You called it there, yeah. Mate.
Okay, I've just got time to plug the current issue of The Gooner, which is the final one of the season. It went on sale at the Norwich match at the end of April and features, amongst other things, an interview with George Graham's first assistant manager at Arsenal, Theo Tholey, conducted by Laith himself. It also carries articles on the benefits or otherwise of signing Zlatan Ibrahimovic, goal-scoring centre-backs, the Arsenal ladies, and Stan Kroenke as well.
Are we going to sign Zlatan Ibrahimovic?
It's a press idea, not reality.
Can I just say, as we're doing the minutes at the end, the lads who are cycling to Paris, the Pello, Tony Adams lads,
yes.
Good luck to them. It's a brilliant cause. Look them up on Twitter. Fantastic calls for you know, but it's been done by a great set of lads. So I just had to do one plug. So
fair enough. To return to The Gooner, it's available from the online Gooner website. If you want a copy, sent in the post, or you can buy an e-edition of it to read on your tablet or your phone. Full details on the website of that. Also, a bit of housekeeping here. We are also looking for a couple of new sellers for The Gooner next season, because a couple of our sellers are basically moving out of London. So if you're interested in making some money before going into the stadium to watch the game, just get in touch through the website. Look for the link to the contact page at the bottom of each page if you want to volunteer for that. A reminder that you can contact us regarding anything to do with this podcast via Twitter at Gooner Podcast, and via email, goonerpodcast@gmail.com is the address. Thank you for all your questions and topics submitted for today. I think I've name-checked everybody. And with that, it is goodbye from David.
Good night all, and speak to you next season.
Mustafa.
Happy St. Totteringham's Day again.
And Laith.
Cheers, all the best.
We will be back with another edition once next season is underway. Apologies, this one has gone on longer than normal. However, I think you might have enjoyed it. Hopefully we'll be excited in August or September by a summer full of quality incomings. Enjoy your summer until then. This is your host, Kevin Richards, saying goodbye and thanks for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Way!